I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and my guest today is the film director Robert Altman. Bob, because we knew you were coming, our next story is about an artist whom you've called one of your biggest influences, although he's not a filmmaker at all.
There's a hot time in the old town of Dnipropetrovsk tonight, and it is reasonable to assume the same goes for 1,000 other cities, including some Scandinavian. It can at last be said without jinxing the campaign, somehow the decadent democracies, the bungling Bolsheviks, the saps and softies were tougher in the end than the brown shirt bully boys, and smarter too.
That is an excerpt from the radio masterpiece On a Note of Triumph by the legendary radio producer Norman Corwin. Corwin has written 17 books, as well as plays and screenplays, including the Vincent van Gogh biopic Lust for Life. His collaborator and friend, Mary Beth Kirchner, created this tribute to Corwin for Studio 360.
The late Charles Kuralt.
I was 14 or so. The year was about 1948, and I found On a Note of Triumph by Norman Corwin in the high school library. And it was a revelation of what writing could be. I knew it was supposed to be a radio play, I guess, but to me it seemed pure poetry.
So they've given up. They're finally done in, and the rat is dead in an alley back of the Wilhelmstrasse. Take a bow, G.I. Take a bow, little guy. The Superman of tomorrow lies at the feet of you common men of this afternoon. This is it, kid. This is the day. All the way from Newburyport to Vladivostok. You had what it took, and you gave it. And each of you has a hunk of rainbow around your helmet.
I had read books before I discovered Norman Corwin, but he was the first writer who ever excited me. He was the writer who opened up the world to me.
Back in 1936, when Americans first gathered around their radio sets every night, a young man from Boston turned up at CBS and showed the world what radio could do. His name was Norman Corwin. Today, most people probably wouldn't recognize the name, but in the early 1940s, Norman Corwin was nearly as well known as Franklin Delano Roosevelt and much admired. His brilliant radio dramas like On a Note of Triumph, written to mark our victory in Europe at the end of World War II, reached into American homes and across the ocean as far as the radio could carry the words he wrote.
Is victory a sweet dish, or isn't it? And how do you think those lights look in Europe after 5 years of blackout going on to six? Rather pretty good. Pretty good, sister. The kids of Poland will soon know what an orange tastes like. And the smell of honest-to-God bread freshly made and sawdust-free will create a stir in the streets of Athens.
Norman Corwin says even as a young boy, he was attracted to language.
Even when I didn't understand it, I felt it was rich and melodic and beautiful for its sound, if nothing else. And so long before I understood what Keats was writing about or Shakespeare was writing about, I became tipsy on imbibing their lines.
Did you hear about the plot to overthrow Christmas? Well, gather ye now from Maine to the Isthmus of Panama and listen to the story of the utter inglory of some gory goings-on in hell.
CBS was still a small company when Norman Corwin arrived. William Paley, president of CBS, was creating a strong news division with journalists like Edward R. Murrow, Robert Trout, and Eric Severide. To provide dramatic broadcasts of equal integrity, he brought in John Houseman and Orson Welles and Norman Corwin. CBS gave these young men what they needed most, the freedom to do their own work.
They never asked to see what I was doing. They never said, you're doing 26 programs, we'd like the titles of them, please. The first they heard of it was when it was on the air.
Well, lucky you. You happened to dial this program in time to attend a trial stranger than any since we first learned the knack of breathing. And that was a long time back. The poor folks listening to other stations will lose all this. But congratulations to you for being no such fool as to miss the undecided molecule.
Corwin took on a series for CBS that has never been equaled in broadcasting before or since. Every week, he wrote, cast, rehearsed, and directed a completely original play, starring the greatest actors of the time, Orson Welles, Jimmy Stewart, Charles Laughton. Every program was broadcast live. And the moment one performance was over, Corwin had to confront the blank page again.
A deadline is the one thing I abhor. Go away, deadline, and don't come back no more.
Corwin wrote everywhere, in barber chairs, in the bathtub. He wrote morning, noon, and night. He wrote on the train ride to his wedding and on the train ride back. In the heat of the creative process, writing, producing, and directing a program every week, Corwin's imagination was malleable like heated iron from a forge. He struck while he could before it could cool off. Producer Norman Lear understands the demands of a weekly show.
I am a writer, and I like the way I write, but I can't write a television script every week. How he did it every week, I could no more explain to you than to tell you how he was made chemically. I mean, it's a wonder to me, that output, and the quality of that output.
Between the Great Depression and the end of World War II, Norman Corwin gave broadcasting a sense of purpose, a grasp of aesthetic principles and intellectual substance. He was the poet laureate of radio's golden age, influencing many young writers who were listening to the radio, who now call themselves children of Corwin. Writer Ray Bradbury considers himself one of them.
The best way to describe Norman Corwin is he was the greatest director, the greatest writer, and the greatest producer in the history of radio. There was nobody like him. Nobody could touch what he did.
Writer Studs Terkel does too.
He wasn't simply his writing, it was his commitment too to a certain kind of world, I think. You can't separate the writing style from the substance that was there. It was a perfect fusion, I think, of the two aspects of an artist.
Corwin's masterpiece is the program he wrote for broadcast on the day of our victory in Europe, On a Note of Triumph. Carl Sandburg called it one of the all-time great American poems.
I can never forget the moment hearing it. It was early evening in Chicago. I know we were having dinner, my wife and I, at a friend's house, and it went on. The company there all sat there transfixed. In fact, this radio station, with which I've been connected for some 40 years, WFMT, during its first several years, would sign off every night with Norman Corwin's The Prayer from An Honor of Triumph.
Lord God of test tube and blueprint, who jointed molecules of dust and shook them till their name was Adam, who taught worms and stars how they could live together, appear now among the parliaments of conquerors and give instruction to their schemes. Measure out new liberties, so none shall suffer for his father's color or the credo of his choice. Post proofs that brotherhood is not so wild a dream as those who profit by postponing it pretend. Sit at the treaty table and convoy the hopes of little peoples through expected straits, and press into the final seal a sign that peace will come for longer than posterities can see ahead, that man unto his fellow man shall be a friend forever.
Finally, producer Norman Lear.
Emerson said we lie in the lap of an immense intelligence and we are simply receptors to its beams. And his receptors, if Emerson is correct, put him so much in touch with the American people and the American dream.
For Studio 360, I'm Mary Beth Kirshner.
Norman Corwin is 94 years old and teaches journalism at the University of Southern California. You can hear in its entirety Corwin's classic wartime piece On a Note of Triumph on our website, studio360.org.